during the Republican National Convention at the White House last week, I heard pundits repeatedly point out that electioneering with government resources was against the law. The Hatch Act? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent. And maybe you recall Wisconsin's legislative caucus scandal in the early 2000s, when state employees were caught campaigning on state time with state resources, and it cost both the Republican state Senate leader at the time and the Democratic Assembly Speaker their jobs. What if it hadn't? How might Wisconsin be different today if there was no accountability back then? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. And it's where we get to spend our last hour of the morning before 1A starts here on the Ideas Network. And our guest is Karen Greenberg. She's a historian, professor, and author. She's the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law, an international studies fellow at New America. And she's the host of the Vital Interest podcast. Karen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Set the baseline for me now, if you would. What does government accountability mean, or what should it mean?
Yeah, what government accountability should mean is a number of things. First, that government officials are held accountable to the law, no matter what branch of government that they're in. Number two, that there are checks and balances that actually can work, that each of the branches of government can give a kind of oversight and check to one another, again, in accordance with the rule of law and the Constitution. And I mean, that's the baseline. We can go from there. But accountability means that everybody is beholden to the law. And that is everybody from, you know, the person on the street to the president of the United States. And right now, the mechanisms of accountability are up for grabs, as you know.
Right now, but is this something new, or are we just seeing new levels? And if it's not anything new, Karen Greenberg, how far back can we go to see the dissipating government accountability?
You know, that's such a great question. It kind of makes me want to, you know, get off the show and go write a book right now. You know, like, where did this all start? You know, look, we've had mechanisms of accountability that we know about that have kicked into place, for example, in the Watergate era, and after which there were a number of new provisions for accountability put into place, including something we've heard so much about lately, which is inspector generals in the government inside the executive looking at what might be a misappropriation of funds, a misuse of the law, et cetera, a misuse of power. But I personally think that the erosion of accountability measures and mechanisms took a giant leap forward after 9/11, when so much happened that consolidated power in the presidency and therefore made it harder for the president and the executive to be held accountable, largely because so much was done secretly before it was known. And then President Obama, who decided, well, we're not really going to hold people accountable from that administration for what were excessive violations of law, including massive surveillance of Americans and torture at CIA black sites and many other things as well. But if you're asking me when, I think the moment we're in now very much started in the aftermath of 9/11, when everything that was rights related was made secondary to things that were could be said were in the name of security of the nation and the people.
There not a lot of thought about accountability in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001. It was about survival. It was about understanding what was happening. But that accountability, as you see it, really never came back?
Yeah, it's been a slow erosion. Let me just, you just reminded me of something that I just want to make this very clear. So 9/11, we have in custody at Guantanamo Bay a number of the people who are considered to be the co-conspirators in the 9/11 attacks. Five of them were on trial or supposedly on trial. They've never been held accountable. They've never been tried. And so when you think about the kind of distraction from actually holding people accountable, that's another thing, even though it's not holding our government officials accountable. It is in a way. Their job is to hold others accountable, and they haven't done that. So it's a pretty wide, you know, spectrum here.
So in 2020, following a Republican National Convention with scenes from the White House lawn, what does accountability look like, Karen?
Accountability looks like a dream, a myth, and something that we need to, and something that we need to really focus on and reinvigorate and reestablish, because if we don't, we're in a lot of trouble. And that accountability will, you know, goes to everyone, not just the president and the executive, the courts as well, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation, and Congress. Everybody needs to be held accountable. And even more importantly, everybody needs to know that accountability is something real inside the United States. And if it's not, then not only are we not a nation of law and order, but we really have to go back to rethinking those structures and laws that have supposedly were supposed to hold us accountable.
Checks and balances are the soundbite that we hear that should resonate. But the idea would be that everybody has to answer to somebody. In the face of that idea is the concept of the unitary executive, and that the president should be unfettered. And this certainly was a case that was made after with the start of the war on terror, and the case that's still being made for anybody who takes the White House today. They want to have that power. But is it in the nation's best interest to grant that power?
So I would say yes and no. In certain true emergency situations where it requires some kind of immediate response, you do want the president to have certain powers. To spread that beyond an emergency imminent situation and to say that there is no need to consult with Congress, to have Congress operate the way it's supposed to say yes or no to certain things like going to war. So it would be a stretch too far. And we're in that sort of period right now where we don't know what checks there are on the president. Let me also say there need to be checks on the legislature, something the founding fathers were very concerned with checks not just on the presidency, but checks on the legislature. So abuses of power can happen in any branch. It can also happen inside the courts. And one of the things the founding fathers understood that's actually very interesting is that there's no real true separation of these institutions, whether it's because of professional exchanges, because of the way government works in terms of considerations of what's lawful and what's not lawful. There's still a sense that, you know, the missions can bleed into one another. But that doesn't mean that there can't be very strong and shouldn't be very strong checks and balances. And by the way, part of the checks and balances is the people itself. And that's what you're seeing in Wisconsin now and across the country. Protests are a form of checks and balances when the government fails to check and balance itself.
So what you see on the streets to some degree is accountability itself?
It's a call for accountability. I think if the mechanisms of accountability, the congressional oversight, the use of inspector generals, the courts, and then the general conversation that goes on in terms of what's allowable and what's not allowable, then you see protests in the streets of people saying, okay, well, if our elected officials and the people they appoint can't do this, then we're going to at least make clear what our opinion is.
Karen Greenberg is an expert on national security, terrorism, and civil liberties. She's the author of numerous books, including Reimagining the National Security State, Liberalism on the Brink, which was published this year by Cambridge Press. She's also the host of the Vital Interest podcast and our guest for the hour, answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234. What should accountability look like according to you? Our conversation continues with you and our guest, Karen Greenberg. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Here's something I'd be interested to know. When it comes to our elected officials, how comfortable are you with trusting but not verifying? And when you're answering honestly, does it matter if it's a Democrat or Republican when it happens? And might that make a difference in the effectiveness of our government? I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. And our guest is Karen Greenberg. She's the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law, and we are taking a look at accountability across the board. And where it stands today, Chris in Columbus would like to chime in. Chris, you are on the Ideas Network with Karen Greenberg. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I am a 19-year veteran of the armed forces. I started in their Bush 41, and I was in an anti-terrorism unit at that time. And at that time, in 91, 92, 93, we knew that China was our number one enemy. I was in briefings where we knew where possible terrorist threats were, but were not allowed, and this is from the White House, not allowed to intervene on these people. And then it is my opinion that the real erosion of accountability began when the Clinton impeachment was, when he was not removed during that, because Democrats went totally tribal and have only answered to the God of power since. And Republicans generally have more accountability because they actually believe and they will eventually answer to a God.
It's interesting you bring it up, Chris, because there is the comparison between the impeachment of President Clinton and the impeachment of President Trump. They were both impeached, and when it went to the Senate, then neither were indicted. It is a very similar story, but it goes back to the heart of whether or not it matters if it's a Democrat or Republican who does it. Karen Greenberg, what role does partisanship play in accountability?
I think it plays a very large role, and I'm really grateful to this caller for bringing this up. And I think that's part of the problem. I mean, when you think about just taking a step back and you think about not negotiating within government, but when you think about the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be the ultimate arbiter of stepping aside from politics and looking at the Constitution and being able to make some kind of impartial decision, it turns out that it's been very hard to come up to that standard. Now, Justice Roberts has done a good job of sort of surprising people on both sides of the aisle with his decisions and sort of veering one way one time and one way or another. And I think that's actually very healthy for the Supreme Court. And I think that that mechanism of accountability is first and foremost extremely important. In terms of impeachment, what we've seen about impeachment in the Clinton impeachment and now is very much the inclusion of partisan activities, both in the bringing of the charges and in the resolution of the charges, and then in the inability to bring it to trial in the Senate. So yes, I think impeachment as a mechanism of accountability, which I should have mentioned in my opening remarks, has really lost its vigor and its legitimacy. And so I think it's something we need to think about going forward. What is impeachment? How does it function? How should it function? And I think we need to go back to, if not square one, maybe square two on that.
Karen, you probably have noticed that Wisconsin is at the top of the news this morning, with the president expected to visit Kenosha later today. And you've expanded accountability beyond the checks and balances of government that we're all familiar with to talk about the accountability that is being called for by those who have taken to the streets. Susan from Kenosha called, couldn't stay with us. She says she loves the mayor of Kenosha. She loves the city of Kenosha. She's concerned that the president is coming against local leaders' wishes. And she wants to know if local or state governments have any ability to check the federal government. Is there accountability that can be found there?
Only minimally, in a way. I mean, that is what our representatives are for. That's what our courts are for. The courts take a long time, except for in sort of injunctions that they can impose. So in theory, there is a kind of check and balance from the states, but in practice, it's very hard to see how that would play out. However, there are some very firm laws. And one of the things that the Secretary of Defense, for example, has made clear is that using federal troops against the wishes of people in a state is something that they don't want to do, let's say, when it comes to the election, because people see that there could be some attempt by the president to use federal troops at the time of the election. So, yes, there are certain red lines that in theory, and it looks like in practice for now, at least in rhetoric, will not be stepped over. But But actually, as we saw in Portland, it takes a while to enforce those lines. And this is a president who's willing to go pretty far, no matter what the law is, to test whether mechanisms of protest and of dissent and by governors and mayors can kick in.
I'm still weighing the balance between accountability and partisanship and trying to find what happened to accountability in the last century, as you describe it, Karen. And in the context of that, you also see this polarizing partisanship at the same time. Now, causation does not mean correlation necessarily, but it is impossible not to notice the two.
You know, it's interesting how we describe partisanship. Partisanship used to mean sort of Republican or Democrat. Now it means something, it's shifted. And partisan is sort of like, do we want excessive powers on the part of the government, the central government in Washington, or do we want these powers to be spread out among the country, among the majority of the country? And that's the conversations that shifted. And in a way—
But doesn't that conversation pivot on who's in power and whether or not you support that party? Isn't that part of the partisanship role involved here?
Yes and no, because you've seen so many Republicans defect from this president that it really does muddy the question of partisanship. When you see people, whether it's Jeff Flake or judges or others who have identified throughout their life as Republicans, whether in the George H.W. Bush days or in the George W. Bush days, and now saying this is not. So it's almost like we have three partisan entities and two of them have aligned with one another. So again, I do think you're right. The point is, you know, partisanship can matter in accountability, but no, we don't have a Mount Olympus. We don't have, a cadre of beings that is going to decide separate from everything else. And so partisanship can be considered, but every possibility to make it subservient to the law rather than just you're loyal to your party should be in place. And one thing that this president has done is categorically and very strongly say, no, that should not be the case. Loyalty should come first. And that's a different standard.
Karen Greenberg is the host of the Vital Interest podcast and the editor of three online publications. And we are looking at accountability this morning, where we find it, where we've lost it, and perhaps how we can get it back. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. Mark in La Crosse, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, question for the guest. If we had a stronger sense of accountability or stronger mechanisms for accountability of the government, might that have dissuaded the Obama administration from spying on the Trump campaign and then sabotaging the early Trump presidency?
Well, first we'd have to get the facts, but to see if that's actually the case or if that's just, you know, these both parties are going at each other in so many different ways that it's hard to get, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff. I do think in the larger question of any entity, partisan entity or Republicans or Democrats as an organized group, or even some of them spying on one another. Yeah, if we had mechanisms of transparency and accountability, that might be the case. But there's something else going on here in that question that I think is really interesting, which is this, where is the body that will say, here's our line of legitimacy. Here's why we can trust our elections. We need more voices out there saying, here's how we know our elections, our disinformation campaigns are stymied, that our electoral processes are done in a legitimate and lawful way.
We're hearing the opposite of that.
Yes, exactly. And I think that is what's missing. We need many, whether it's, you know, politicians, well, maybe not politicians, but whether it's judges or law bodies of law, the American Bar Association and others, to come out and say, here's what we know. Here's how we know it's legitimate. Here's how we can make sure that we know it and get the American people to buy into this. Because what's most corrosive here is this sense that things don't work. And then among the things that don't work in a legitimate fashion are our elections. That's a very dangerous point to be at, particularly on the precipice of such an important election.
And yet here we are. And Mark, I just want to point you to the Senate Select Intelligence Committee report, bipartisan, that was released a couple of weeks ago, that explained why there was spying going on into the Trump campaign and was alluding to the connections with the Russian government. And you can find that. It is a bipartisan report. It is from the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. And there is information available there about what happened in the transition between the last two administrations. The issue is about accountability. And the forum is yours, along with our guest, Karen Greenberg. 1-800-642-1234 would be interested in knowing from you what we can do to make accountability cool again. Or is this just passé? And are we old-fashioned this way? Accountability, who needs it? Up next is news. Then we'll talk more with Karen Greenberg and you about how we can hold ourselves accountable beyond government. What about you and me? I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Immediately following the morning show this morning, you can hear 1A at its new time, live from 9 to 11, hosted by Jen White, most recently working in Chicago, and now a national voice, a live national show, new for you starting this week. Check it out and let us know what you think. For those expecting On Point after our show this morning, you will find it after Chapter a Day today at 1 o'clock on the Ideas Network. There are a couple other minor changes you can find on our website, and we'd like you to take a listen and let us know what you think. Your feedback is always important to us. So for complete details, visit WPR.org/fall2020. Maybe it was easy to forget after all of the shock and awe, but we were witnesses to the largest global anti-war protest in history in the lead up to the Iraq War. Not that February 15th, 2003 made any difference at all. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and of all the countless what-ifs, isn't it worth asking? What if there had been a little more oversight in the way the case was made to invade Iraq? What difference do you think that could have made? Well, we're talking about accountability this morning, wherever we find it, wherever we lost it, and where we might get it back. And we're taking your input at 1-800-642-1234. And our guest is Karen Greenberg. She's the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University Law School. Let me see where we begin here. Let's start with Jesse. Jesse in Green Bay, you're on the Ideas Network with Karen Greenberg. Good morning.
Good morning. I just think, you know, when talking about where to start with accountability, we have to stop the finger pointing. You know, the age-old parable, those who live in glass houses need to stop throwing stones. And this idea of, well, why didn't we hold this person accountable? And, well, if we're holding this person accountable, what about this? It's not getting us anywhere. Great, that person found a loophole. Now let's fill in the loophole and move forward. This idea that we're just going to sit and, well, you know, two wrongs make a right is not getting us anywhere.
So the idea is, well, their guy got away with it. My guy should get away with it. And your solution is, well, that guy might have gotten away with it, and we should make sure that doesn't happen again.
Correct.
Karen?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think, you know, one way to think about this is in terms of restoring some kind of accountability and legitimacy is that it's one thing to shine a light on what happened that was wrong, and another thing to understand, and in that same vein, it's one thing to say these are the steps that got us to that wrong decision, let's say the Iraq War that you just brought up, but that the thirst for punishing cannot be what's motivating. What has to motivate is the attempt to do things right in the future. And so I do think there can't be too much emphasis on the punitive, and at the same time, not too much following your last point of, you know, if someone got away with it, everybody else should get away with it. And I think this sort of Black Lives Matter protest movement is very much a way of saying, let's at least get our narratives straight. And let's move into the future on the same page.
But my thought was perhaps instead of taking along with taking to the streets, that more effective accountability might have been more effective than the largest global protest in world history.
Yes.
So going back then and to that time and that era, and as we look at accountability, and this is where you detail it started to erode away to the degree we find it today, how did that Bush administration respond to the September 11 attacks? How did it starts to erode our checks and balances, and then we get the build up to the war, but then it just doesn't stop. The war on terror continues today. Where's the accountability right in that?
So let's talk a little bit about the decision to go to war in Iraq. You are exactly right to point to that. If you had to pick one thing of an issue in which accountability was never visited upon those who perpetrated it, and more importantly, on the processes that allow it to happen. That was a railroading of an agenda that a number of people in the country had wanted to happen for a long time, which was attacking Iraq. And so the intentionally mistaken, false conversation attempting on the one hand to link terrorism to Saddam Hussein, which was factually untrue, to the larger issue that the war was premised upon, which was that there were WMDs in Iraq, which was also untrue, and the intentional lying and not listening to people from the intelligence community who were saying, this isn't right, this isn't true, not listening to the mechanisms that are in place on the inside, the officials that we trust to give us the information that presidents and Congress make decisions on were taken out of the mix. And so when you ask about what can be done going forward, one of the answers is professionalization, that expertise, the mechanisms that we have, the officials that we have, if we pick them in ways that have to do with their background, their expertise, their knowledge, then we have a better chance, and we listen to them, then we have a better chance of making the right decisions. What you've seen in the war on terror and what you've seen now is it a way of taking out of the mix those individuals who might give a different narrative of things, one that might be based on facts, one that might be based on expertise, one that might be based on experience. And what's happened here is that tendency has been blown into giant proportions.
Karen Greenberg, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-642-1234 in search of accountability. John in Madison, you're on the Ideas Network. What do you think?
Well, let's go back to the year 2000. And accountability. In the year 2000, the Supreme Court, in the Citizens United decision, said it's okay that money is speech and corporations are people. And since then, corporate America has bought Congress with billions. And there is the source of one major problem. And right now, Mitch McConnell is sitting on 400 bills. He won't let anybody vote on it because he is in power, and he is the chokehold on American government right now. And he's pointing to the Democrats, whereas he is the problem.
But that sounds a lot like the finger pointing that our first caller brought up, though. You mentioned the courts, John, and you mentioned corporations, all different levels of accountability. We haven't even touched on corporate accountability yet, Karen.
Yeah, I know. Well, we only have an hour.
Good point.
So there was a lot in that question. Yeah. First of all, when he said 2000, I thought he was going to bring up Bush v. Gore, which was where so much of this distrust started in terms of elections. Second of all, pointing at Mitch McConnell is clear. I mean, stop blocking these issues from Congress from going forward to being voted on to being raised is important. But this is why we have a vote. And in theory, the ultimate mechanism of accountability for a democracy is the vote, which is why, Bush v. Gore could have framed his remarks. And I think that it's great to say, one person or another is in the way, and it may even be factually true, as it is true right now in what's happening in Congress. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't all go out and vote, which is, I think, the real takeaway from there. Ultimate accountability is to vote for the people you want in office, which is why, going back to our earlier discussion, we have to be able to trust in our election process.
Is there an accountability conspiracy? Is there some sort of coordinated campaign to eliminate accountability? Is somebody pulling some strings behind the scenes that maybe we don't see that has decided that they shouldn't have to, in positions of power, answer to anybody and things will be better that way?
It's not a conspiracy, but it is a concerted effort by some, in some cases, people with money, in some cases, people with an agenda of wanting the president to hold the power, in some cases, the agenda of wanting to make sure that expertise is kicked out of government, in some cases, making it so that certain deals are made around the world that are based not on democratic principles, but on economic realities and personal gain. Taken all together, it doesn't look good for accountability. And so it may not be a conspiracy, but what it is an unaccountable moment in history.
Frank in La Crosse, you're on the Ideas Network with Karen Greenberg.
Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to stick with my original question as the topics kind of continue to evolve here. How do we hold the My original question was regarding security clearance processes, which have been politicized. It works at one level for the common contractor and employee of the federal government, but for those political appointees, I think of one particular to the State Department who blatantly lied on her resume and yet still was put into the position. You know, so the professor's comments on the security clearance process and, you know, you could go much further in terms of other examples of
Yeah, Frank, and we're short on time here. So we're talking about national security and accountability here, and we're talking about truth and accountability here. Karen?
Yeah. Look, yes, we would like to have a mechanism where people who fill out forms for security clearances for any other jobs are telling the truth. We're supposed to be able to figure that out ahead of time. And if we think we, if the government thinks it's not important, then it's an indicator, but that is a very small piece, although important, a very small piece of the larger issues of corrupting the accountability structures of government.
What about just the value of a lie or the lack of value of truth?
Yeah, well, you know, we have a president who says that everybody lies as a given and has said it on a number of occasions, as have other officials, that we can't expect truth from anybody. So why are you expecting it from us is the implicit message there. And so there is going to be, look, we have the media, which is being accused of being the false news. Media was one of the mechanisms for bringing to the public the truth, the facts. Now that seems to be in question. And the inability of us as a species to deal with the internet and the millions of different messages that are coming through social media to color our thoughts, with disinformation campaigns being one example, is a problem. It's not insurmountable. It is surmountable with a good degree of clarity, organization, and expertise.
Do we get to choose if everybody lies or if there is still truth in perhaps a post-truth world? Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. She continues the conversation along with you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So is there an argument to be made against accountability? I'm struggling with that. In a post-truth world, has accountability become passé? What's the case against oversight? Who needs to take responsibility anymore? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network, and I'm being sarcastic. I'm Lee Rayburn. Seriously, does it seem to you like we're suffering an accountability deficiency? And does it seem that that deficiency extends well beyond politics? And if so, what's the value in that? Still time for your call at 1-800-642-1234. Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. She hosts the Vital Interest podcast, and now she's going to fix it for us. All right, that's a heavy, heavy lift, Karen. But tell me, how can we make accountability cool again?
Okay, first, I want to continue something we said before that leads to this question. There is such a thing as facts. if we take the word truth away, which seems to have, you know, too many political tentacles right now, and there are facts. You know, it's a certain number of degrees outside, you know, you have a certain amount of money in the bank, you're a certain height. These are facts. And there are many facts that have to do with how many protesters are in the street, what they are protesting, who they are, what the government is doing, what it isn't doing. So I like to, I think the word truth has become, you know, politicized, yeah. But there are facts. And that's actually a starting point. What are the facts? How do we know what the facts are? And not always having to say, well, maybe it's a fact. It's not true. It's not true that everybody lies. I shouldn't say it's not true. It's not accurate. it's not accurate. And it's not accurate that everybody lies. And it's not accurate that there aren't facts. There are facts. And I think one of the ways around this, and this may sound like I have rose-colored glasses on in some ways, is that we need to really make sure that our media is holding itself to the highest standards and is not corrupted by the corporate interests that own them or the partisan interests that own them. And we still have a ways to go to make that work.
So we started the conversation with, we only have an hour, and I, you know, with the, as the host of the Vital Interest podcast, how long are your podcasts? Because we've got a lot more to go.
My podcasts are sometimes quite long. Yes,
I'd be fascinated. And here's you brought up voting earlier, and Suzanne from Milwaukee couldn't stay with us, but she certainly wants to bring this up. She is wondering from you, Karen, how voters can hold officials accountable when seats are gerrymandered and most elected seats are largely safe.
Right. Gerrymandering's a huge issue, a long time in coming. So I think there's two ways to address that. One is we have to, you know, institute electoral reforms as many states are trying to do right now, in Florida, for example. But I think the other way is to really make sure that this slow slide doesn't happen. So there were warning signs early on in voter suppression, in gerrymandering, in all of these categories. And by the way, as we talked about in the run-up to the Iraq War, there were so many warning signs. I think instead of rolling our eyes, we have to take warning signs that, you know, our gut tells us are problematic and address them right away. And we have to vote for the kind of people who will help the country do that.
So as I walk away from this, I understand the importance of accountability, and I can see where we've lost the potentials without accountability. But is there, so, and the question is, in something so big and looming, what can I do about it? Is personal responsibility part of a solution here? Do people need to start saying that's my responsibility and I take responsibility for that?
Absolutely. And part of that responsibility is I take responsibility for having a critical intelligence to look at things and to figure out things to the best of my ability. And you know what? That's good enough. And I think one of the mechanisms of accountability that comes a little beyond that is local politics. Right now, local politics matter. It's a place you can make a difference. It's a place you can actually know the folks involved and not have to rely on someone's interpretation of what's happening in Washington or elsewhere. And so it's personal, it's community, it's local, and then we'll just have to go from there.
So what would you see as the outcome of restoring accountability in a place that puts checks and balances in a way that everybody has to answer to somebody? What's the end result?
The end result of having a checks and balances,
yeah,
in place?
Yeah.
The end result is that we live in a society where things are adjudicated at the personal level and all the way up to the court level and through the legislative level, and where nobody gets everything they want, but there's give and take. And there's still a lot of that going on around the country. There's a lot of, you know, well-intentioned compromise, a lot of transparency. And transparency is one of the big issues here we haven't talked about. The more that goes on in secret, the more it's impossible to stop once it's started. So again, the result is we'll live in a safer, more secure, less anxiety-ridden society where we can pay attention to the news and not only to Washington politics.
What I'm hearing is this sense of trust.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? A sense of trust.
Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. She also hosts the Vital Interest podcast, which could run a little long, considering the discussions that we're having this morning. And they are fascinating because it does shine a light on where we stand today and what could we do going forward. How would we make accountability cool again? How could a candidate possibly run on a campaign of just, you know what, I answer to you and I don't have any secrets?
Yeah, I mean, I think how that could happen is very simply, it would so shock people that I think, look, there's going to be dirt brought up on everybody. So I think what a candidate can say is, look, I may have issues. I might not have known from the time I was three that I was going to run for office, but you can trust me to represent your interests and I will keep you informed every day along the way.
There is an extreme of transparency that was that is part of a novel from Dave Eggers called A Circle, which took social networks to its extreme. And so you were monitored at all times with microphones and videos. And if you wanted to be an elected official, you had to be monitored at all times so that we could trust you. That's a little bit extreme. And it's a novel by Dave Eggers. But it is certainly what I think of. If sunshine's the best disinfectant and accountability is what we need, how can we better make how can we improve transparency in the things that we want to trust?
So I love Dave Eggers and I love that book and his other ones. So I think it's going to take, it's not going to take a leap of faith. We can't just be told to trust people. I think it's going to be a rolling back of authorities of what elected officials and officials are allowed to do. And then perhaps being able to expand what they're allowed to do. And it's going to take rolling back secrecy. It can't be that secrets can be held just by saying it's a national security issue. The amount of things that were classified after George Bush and 9/11 equaled all of, you know, one of those statements that said about them, it was equal to all of the classified documents in American history up to that point. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the sense of it. The amount of secrecy, lack of transparency, classification. I know it sounds a little wonkish, but it has everything to do with it. We need to simplify what we know and how we know it.
And accountability is something you've been talking about for years and making the case for. And in your position of the director of Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law, connect these things for me, Karen. What does national security have to do with accountability?
It has everything to do with accountability. So national security is what one of the chief responsibilities of the president and the government to keep the country safe. But under that rubric of national security after 9/11, as well as before, but a lot after 9/11, many things were done, whether it was the use of surveillance authorities, the use of police powers, the changing of the intelligence mission, the not telling us about things running up to war in a variety of places around the world, and many other things that just became a cover for the erosion of civil liberties and human rights. And so accountability and national security has pushed aside the need for accountability, almost as if you hold us accountable, we won't keep you safe. That's not a trade-off we're willing to make. And I think it's really interesting that we've talked this whole hour, and I hold myself accountable for this, have not brought up COVID. You want to talk about an issue of national security, that's COVID. And the more transparency and the more responsibility on the part of the government, the better for us all.
Karen Greenberg, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Karen is a historian, professor, and author, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. 1A is next, and they are going to Kenosha today, and they'll be joined by John Nichols from The Nation. Listen to 1A live from 9 to 11 here on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show.